ॐ जनजमनन्दस्य जनाजनशलकया चक्षुस्मिलितञ्जन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्तुभितं येन भूतले सायं पकलमयं ददति सर्वदन्तिकम् वन्दितकपुचूभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रीतरं पविनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। Reading from the fourth canto, the 28th chapter. Is quite a long chapter, and the 29th is also long, and that will end this pastime. 29th is still longer, and that will end the pastime of Narada Muni preaching to Maharaj Prachinibhaiyashad by his explaining the allegorical story of King Paranjana. King Paranjana is every living entity seeking happiness in this material world, inhabiting a body. Usually we don't think of ourselves inhabiting a body. And because we identify with our body, most of our activities are centered around the service to our body. So therefore Prabhupada again and again and again and again and again would preach so strongly that we are not the body, that we are eternal souls. How one's life changes if one accepts this fact. Just the mere acceptance of it changes one's life so dramatically. Immediately one understands that we're eternal, therefore how I act will determine my future. Immediately one understands why the material world is the way that it is. Some are suffering, some are born into palatial buildings, some are tall, some are short. Animals, humans, animal-like humans. Everything is understood as soon as one learns or accepts that one is an eternal soul, and therefore immediately one understands the law of karma, one understands transmigration, reincarnation. But then, of course, one can realize, understanding, knowing is one thing and realizing is another. Realization is so much deeper. The identification with the body is cut off. And one sees the body as we might see a hat or a coat. That's deep realization. How fearless one would be having that realization. Ajo nityam shashvatoyam parano nahanyate hanyamane sharire, that we don't die with the death of the body. How fearless one would be. And then, if one is extremely fortunate, one can realize the nature of that eternal soul. The activity of that eternal soul. And the activity of that eternal soul is what? Service to Krishna. That is the actual sarup, swarupa, my own form, my nature, is that I love Krishna. And those dear to Krishna. That is actually who I am. And therefore we say, who we think we are now is illusion, it's temporary, it's illusory, it is not actually us, because who do we think we are? We think we're something with the body. We have so many upadis, so many identifications, so many identities. connected with a body. I think I'm such and such age, such and such nationality, such and such gender, such and such class, skilled. I'm an engineer, I'm a doctor, I'm a worker, I'm a this, I'm a that. So many identities superimposed over the soul. And these are all temporary, they're all doomed, and they're all based on the body. So the real nature of the living entity, Jivara Sarup, his Sarup, the Jiva's Sarup, is Krishna Nityadas, eternal servant of Krishna, eternally alive in a relationship with Krishna that cannot be broken, but it can be forgotten. As one goes to sleep at night and forgets who one is, and one in his dream maybe imagines so many things. Sometimes we have good dreams, and sometimes we have horrible dreams. And when we're having a good dream, we don't want to wake up even. And when we do wake up, we don't want to get out of bed, because we want to re-enter that dream again. And in a bad dream, we're very happy to get it over with. But it's good dream, bad dream, just a dream. And then when one awakens, one goes about one's day again in his actual identity, as long as one is sane. So similarly, when the living entity wakes up to who he is in relationship with Krishna, how wonderful that moment is, that day is, that time is. How wonderful to be living in our relationship with Krishna, fully situated in our eternal existence. So Paranjana is not like that. And Narada Muni is telling the story of Paranjana to one king, Prachini Barishat, to convince him that the king should change his ways. So he's telling him the story of every man, of which the king is one of those men. And when the king hears this story and sees what happens to Paranjana, he does indeed change his ways. Renunciation so strongly comes to his heart. He realizes it just by associating with Narada Muni. So where are we in the story of Paranjana? And each of so many of the elements within the story, Paranjana is wandering around looking for a queen. So Paranjana is a living entity. The queen is his material intelligence. They inhabit a city. The city is the body. The city has gates, etc., etc., etc. There are so many allegorical points within the story, within the pastime. And now, and Paranjana, sometimes he goes hunting, he enjoys himself, his wife is angry at him because he's acting improperly actually. And then he comes back, he has his family members, thousands of family members. And then, as must happen to every embodied living entity, Paranjana becomes old, and his time of death is coming day by day by day by day. Day, night, day, night. And we heard about the combined effort of jara with prajara, with old age, with the fever, and Yavanaraj, fear preceding death. And yes, let me tell you, sometimes Prabhupada is so condemning in his purports and in his speaking about materialistic life, and sometimes even the things that we feel we need to support us, we support ourselves, he'll be quite condemning about. And why? And the answer is because we tend to take matter for more than it actually is. We tend to invest too much of ourself within it, and too much of our hopes and dreams. We invest in matter. And ultimately, at the time of death, whatever education we have, whatever health we have had, whatever intelligence we have had, whatever great family life we have had, these things can be supportive of our Krishna consciousness, but we tend to take shelter of these independently. And ultimately, as we approach death, one by one, each of these things fail us. One by one, they all fail us. Even our body starts dwindling practically right before our eyes, and then our eyes even fail us. And the last sense to go, one by one the senses fail. And you know which the last sense to go is? Hearing. So one may not be able to talk, one may not be able to see, but if one is fortunate, one can still hear and hear Krishna's names and good instructions. Very fortunate. And if one passes from the body, yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajan yante kalevaram tantanavati kanteya saratad bhava bharata, if one passes from the body remembering Krishna, then one goes to a very, very wonderful place. But Paranjana, every living entity, he is not in that mood. Instead of grasping tightly onto Krishna's names as he's leaving this body, he's holding on to the fallible soldiers of life. Those things, fallible soldiers, this is a term used in the second canto of the Bhagavatam. Pashanapi na pashyati. Although we know we shouldn't rely on those temporary things that we rely on in our life, what do we rely on? We rely on our body, our friends, our relatives. These are compared to our bank balance. These are compared to fallible soldiers. It's like if you're going somewhere, if you're going out somewhere, man will always take his wallet and his money and his credit cards and things like that. And if you go out and you realize you don't have those things, you immediately feel very frightened. What will happen if I'll get into some trouble? What will I do? Immediately some fear comes to the mind. That's a fallible soldier. We take shelter of those things, and really, even at the point of death, if our habit is to take shelter of those things, we will, even though it is clear and obvious they cannot give us any shelter at all. Pashanapina Pashati, we have seen it, yet we do it. Habit. Therefore, especially in Vedic times, the sannyasi is a mendicant, one who is spiritually serious. They would practice depending upon Krishna. Wander with nothing material. With nothing. Just practicing depending on Krishna. And seeing how at every turn Krishna would care for them in his own way. Taking shelter of that real soldier, that powerful soldier, the only soldier powerful enough to stop death, taking shelter of Krishna, practicing for that. But Paranjana was not like that. So we'll read text 21 and see how far we go. We'll read just English, we'll read some English and some purports. King Paranjana continued worrying. He was old and getting nearer to death. After I pass from this world, how will my sons and daughters, who are now fully dependent on me, live and continue their lives? Their positions will be similar to that of a passenger aboard a ship wrecked in the midst of the ocean. He is the ship. His ship is going down. He's going to die. And instead of wondering and worrying what will happen to me, Where will I go? His mind is absorbed in the family members. Although King Paranjana should not have lamented over the fate of his wife and children, he nonetheless did so due to his miserly intelligence. Why is it miserly intelligence? What is a miser? Huh? Yeah, but what is specifically a miser? There's so many selfish people, but all are not misers. What is he, a fighter? He doesn't want to let anything go.
Attached.
He's attached. He has. There's a difference between a miser and a poor man. Because what's the difference?
Money.
Yeah. Where did that come from? Yes. But there's a similarity. What's the similarity? Yeah. There comes, this is what everyone was saying from this side, the tight-fistedness. He doesn't spend, although he has money. So miserly intelligence, what does miserly intelligence mean? Even though he has it. Different from someone who has no intelligence. A miser is different from someone who has no money. Maharaja has money but doesn't use what he has. So a person who has intelligence but doesn't use it is miserly intelligence. So he should not have lamented. But due to his miserly intelligence, in the meantime, Yavanaraj, whose name was fear itself, immediately drew near to arrest him. What is that great fearful thing? It is death, and death comes. It comes, it comes. Who will take care of my dog and my parakeet when I'm gone? Who will mow the lawn? Who will do this? And death is coming. So is that intelligent? I'm not going to ask you because you'll come out with a very clever... Okay, I'm going to test you out now. Is that intelligent? To be worrying about those kind of things at the time of death? When one's own life and one's whole next birth is in the balance? Not intelligent. It's what? Can't be intelligent. Can't be, it isn't. So death drew fear itself, because if we've ever been afraid, we've seen a partial element of fear itself. And whatever fear we have seen is not the complete fear itself. Fear itself is death. Some have glimpsed death. It's terrifying. And how strong we will actually have to be in our faith. Not have to be, but if we are fortunate, if we have built up our faith and dependence and realization about Krishna at that time, how fortunate we'll be. We'll be able to hold on to Krishna. But if not, how unfortunate we'll be. We'll be shaken and we'll remember so many other things, but we won't be able to hold on to Krishna. Everything else we're going to lose that we're attached to. And we'll have to be able to hold on to Krishna if we're fortunate. And that's our training in this life. So many of us, all of us practically speaking, when something, if we have a choice between bad things and good things happening to us, having good days and bad days, which will we choose? We'll choose, yes, we'll choose naturally the good days if we have a choice. But which are actually better for us is another thing. So in some ways the bad days are much better, because they're pointing out to us, letting us know how focused we have the capacity to be upon Krishna. Because the ultimate bad day is coming. Will we be able to hold on to Krishna? Well, we should see the bad days as practice days. To see. Test days. Test examination in the sense of assessing. Self-assessment. So Prabhupada explains in his purport that worrying about one's own children while not knowing one's own fate is quite foolish. So Prabhupada explains, in any case, everyone is afraid of death. And we can surely say everyone. And therefore death is called bhaya, or fear. Although King Paranjana was engaged in thinking of his wife and children, death did not wait for him. One cannot say, please, I have some unfinished business left. As soon as I complete it, I'll be ready to go. I'll mount the chariot of death. No, please, just give me another 1 year, 6 months, 1 month, 3 days, 15 minutes, 1 second. I cannot say. Death did not wait for him. Death does not wait for any man. It will immediately carry out its duty. Since death must take away the living entity without hesitation, it is the ultimate God realization of the atheists, who spoil their lives thinking of country, society, and relatives to the neglect of God consciousness. And towards the end of the purport to 22. After giving up this body, one who is fully Krishna conscious does not accept another material body but returns home, back to Godhead. Everyone should try to attain this perfection. Okay? We should all try to attain this. Unfortunately, instead of doing so, people are absorbed in thoughts of society, friendship, love, and relatives, not knowing what's going to happen next to them. This Krishna consciousness movement, however, is educating people. Krishna consciousness is an educational movement. Educating people throughout the world and informing them how to conquer death. What a noble task. To conquer death is the noble mission of human life, and to educate ourselves and others how to conquer death is the most munificent, magnanimous of welfare work. So therefore, tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam kaviviriditam kamasapaham Shravana Mangalam Shivaratatam Buri Garanti Burida. So how can one do this wonderful thing? We have to know for ourselves and how to help others with this. Harim Vina Nas Sritim Taranti. One cannot conquer death without taking shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Taking shelter means learning the art of holding on very, very, very tightly to Krishna. Because we will not have anything else. Think. What do you rely on now? Some people rely on their wit to pull them through a difficult situation. Some people rely on their money, their beauty, their intelligence, their strength, physical strength, their voice even. Some talent, some skill, some resourcefulness. But at the time of death, none of that will be sufficient. They will all prove fallible soldiers. So, the thing that we have to practice, learn to rely upon, is to take shelter of Krishna. So, text 23, when the Yavanas were taking King Paranjana away to that place, binding him like an animal, in other words, he was dying, the king's followers became greatly aggrieved, just like at the time of death, one's friends and relatives become so upset. While they lamented, they were forced to go along with him. The serpent, so this is part of the allegory, the serpent is the life force within the body of Paranjana. The serpent, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj, because our life force, we get weaker and weaker and weaker as we approach death. Old age makes us weak, and day by day, we get weaker and weaker and weaker. If we die of simple and natural means. The serpent, the life force, who had already been arrested by the soldiers of Yavanaraj and was out of the city, he began to follow his master along with the others. As soon as they all left the city, what happens? What is the city in the analogy? The body. And what happens to the body as soon as the life force leaves? Yeah, but then what happens? Have you ever seen?
It gets cold and hard.
It gets cold and hard and stiff, and then immediately turns yellow, worm food. Yep. It immediately starts decomposing. Immediately. Why do I say immediately? Because it's immediate. I mean, within 1 second. It starts to decompose. Soon as the soul leaves, instantaneously it starts decomposing. Well, it wasn't decomposing as long as the soul is there. But the second it leaves, it starts to... It's astounding and shocking. So what happened? The serpent... He began to follow his master. As soon as they all left the city, the soul and the life force left the city, left the body, it was immediately dismantled and smashed to dust. Boy, it's great to come back to the Bhagavatam. Reality therapy. There is more, by the way. There is a positive side, but we have to understand the reality of this quite deeply, otherwise there's no impetus to be serious about Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness, there's two sides. There's the sweetness that pulls us forward. We want to go to Krishna. We must become attracted to Krishna. That pulls us. And then there's this, the other side. If you don't, the stick comes out in this way. By this reality therapy reminding us again and again what will happen, what must happen, what will happen to each and every one of us. Prabhupada's purport. When the living entity is arrested, all his followers, namely the life, air, the senses, and sense objects, immediately leave the lump of matter, the body. When the living entity and his companions leave, the body no longer works but turns into basic material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. When a city is attacked by enemies, when a city attacked by enemies is vacated by its inhabitants, the enemies immediately take advantage of that city and bombard of that city. The enemy immediately takes advantage of that city and bombards it to smash the whole thing to dust. When we say, dust thou art, and into dust thou shalt return, we refer to the body. When a city is attacked and bombarded by enemies, the citizens generally leave, and the city ceases to exist. It is a foolish person who engages in improving the conditions of a city without caring for the citizens or inhabitants. Similarly, a living entity who is not properly enlightened in spiritual knowledge simply takes care of the external body, not knowing that the spirit soul is the principal factor within the body. in the last paragraph. Human civilization. Devoid of Krishna consciousness is simply a civilization of lower animals. Why does Prabhupada say that so many times? And the knowledge as well. Sophisticated, but still on the animal level. Soulless, actually soulless. Sometimes such a civilization may study the dead body and consider the brain or the heart. However, no part of the body is important unless the spirit soul is present. In a modern civilization of cows and asses, Prabhupada does not mince his words, scientists try to search out some value in the brain or the heart of a dead man. When King Paranjan was being dragged with great force by the powerful Yavanas, out of his gross ignorance, he still could not remember his friend and well-wisher, the super soul. The living entity must turn towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. Why does Prabhupada say must? Because sometimes when people say to us, you must do this, because we all have some rebelliousness in us, what do we say? I will not do it. So what does Prabhupada mean when he says, you must do this?
No choice.
But we obviously do have a choice. He says we must surrender unto the Supreme, we must turn towards the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender unto him. What does Prabhupada mean? Not quite no choice. Huh? Yeah, it's in our interest. If it's sort of, it's prefaced by if we want to do what's good for us, then we must turn towards the super soul. That's what's understood in that, and surrender to him. Only then will the living entity be saved from the onslaught. What is that word onslaught? We don't use that word very much. What does it mean, onslaught? When you think of onslaught,
the relentless
grinding wheel. The word relentless is a really good one for this onslaught. Yeah.
Big attacking army that just never ends.
Yeah.
Soldiers.
Yeah.
Slaughter
is an onslaught. So only then will he be saved from the onslaught of the powerful Yavana or Yamaraj or death. In this verse, the word Sakkayam, friend, is very significant in this verse because God is eternally present beside the living entity. The Supreme Lord is also described as Suridam. Suridam means near to the heart, or Prabhupada translates it as ever well-wisher. Dear, dear friend. The Supreme Lord is always a well-wisher, just like a father or mother. Despite all the offenses of a son, the father and mother are always the son's well-wisher. Similarly, despite all our offenses and defiance of the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, defiance, when we think of how we've turned our back on Krishna, defiance is an interesting word. What does defiance mean? What do you think of when you think of the word defiance?
Stubbornly rebellious,
yeah. And proud of it. too. There's an element of arrogance and defiance. Challenging, spiteful. Is there an element of arrogance in that? Defiant.
Mm.
Yeah.
Proud of
it too. Stubbornly rebellious and proud of it. So, despite all the offenses, despite all our offenses and defiance, stubbornly rebellious and proud of it, of the desires of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord will give us immediate relief from all the hardships offered by material nature if we simply surrender unto Him, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mam eva ye papadyante mayam etam svantite. Unfortunately, now there's a phrase in the purport, I'm going to leave it out and then we'll think of what it would be and we'll read the next one. Unfortunately, we do not remember our best friend, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The phrase that Prabhupada puts in there are the reasons we do not remember. What do you think those reasons are? He says two reasons. If you look in the book, you'll easily find out what the answer is. Of course, there could be many, many, many things. Anyone care to venture?
It's
one? Huh? Yeah, you just read it. Yeah, very good. You got the right answer. Might as well read it again.
One,
two, four. Yep. Due to our bad association and great attachment, not only attachment, but great attachment for sense gratification, we do not remember our best friend. Defiance. Based on bad association and attachment for sense gratification. That most unkind kings, this is text 26, Paranjana, had killed many animals in various sacrifices. Now, taking advantage of this opportunity, all these animals began to pierce him with their horns. It was as though he were being cut to pieces by axes. We can all do some create a visualization and think of what it would be to be cut to pieces by axes, by an axe. Just any time we scrape our finger or cut ourselves a little bit, you know, painful, we'd become frightened, this problem would come upset. Imagine being, actually don't imagine it too deeply, but just imagine cutting your neighbor with an axe. How horrible it would be. Just imagine. And this was the karma for activities he had done previously. Because there are witnesses and the universe reacts, it stores in its memory all the actions that we've done, the good and the bad. And we get reactions if we've killed. We must be killed. If we are pierced, we must be cut. If we are exploited, we will be exploited. If we have eaten, we will be eaten. Just imagine the terror of a big creature like 15 times bigger than you grabbed you and tried to eat you. It was going to eat you. There was nothing you could do about it because you were helpless. Just imagine the terror that would be in the mind. How horrible. That's what happens. We've partaken in these kind of things. And we have to pay back. We have to see what it's like from the other side. Look at it from the other person's point of view. Very heavy. Yeah. Very, very heavy. It's due to envy that we do these things. Due to his contaminated association with women, a living entity like King Paranjana eternally suffers all the pangs of material existence and remains in the dark region of material life, bereft of all remembrance for many, many years. In other words, if one is focused on himself as the enjoyer and looking at other living entities as if their existence was simply meant for his enjoyment, one becomes so bewildered, especially by the combination of men and women and women and men, in that spirit, one becomes so bewildered that one goes into the dark region of material life. Practically speaking, one becomes one's body. Practically speaking, by that. Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is a description of material existence. Material existence is experienced when one becomes attached to a woman, and or a woman becomes attached to a man, and forgets his real identity as the eternal servant of Krishna. Nas the Shruti. In this way, in one body after another, the living entity perpetually suffers the threefold miseries of material existence. To save human civilization from the darkness of ignorance, this movement was started. The main purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement is to enlighten the forgetful living entity and remind him of his original Krishna consciousness. In this way, the living entity can be saved from the catastrophe. That's another powerful word, catastrophe. The catastrophe of what? Of ignorance. As well as bodily transmigration. As Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has sung, Anari karama fal padi bhavarnava jale tari bare na deki upai ei vishaya halahale diva nishihya jale mana kabu sukha nahi pai. Because of my past fruit of activities, I have now fallen into an ocean of nescience. I cannot find any means to get out of this great ocean, which is indeed like an ocean of poison. We are trying to be happy through sense enjoyment, but actually that so-called enjoyment is like food that is too hot and causes burning in the heart. I feel a burning sensation constantly, day and night, and thus my mind cannot find any satisfaction. King Paranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife, and consequently, in his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. So maybe we'll stop here, because Paranjana has died and suffered some, and now he has taken another body due to his attachment to his wife. He took his next body as a pious and beautiful princess in the house of the king of Vidarbha. Because he had performed some pious activities, he took a very favorable birth, in one sense, a pious birth. Okay, are there any questions? You had one before, Edward. Is it gone? Or a comment?
You're talking about the word miserly.
Yes.
You're discussing the meaning of the words. I just wanted to comment, David, maybe this one, you just show a connection between the word miserable and miser.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's where the word came from, miserable.
And remember, there was a some kind of a theater production touring Australia a few years ago called Les Miserables, the Miserables. But you know what the translation it is? What does that mean? What does miserable mean? Miserable. What does it in? It's French, but it doesn't mean the miserables. You know what it means? The unfortunates. So if someone is miserable, he's unfortunate.
Any other questions, comments, sagacious advice, admonitions?
Confessions. No? Yes. Bubble gum today, eh? ₹2 and chant one extra round, and it's all right. Oh, were you going to say something? So that would be an interesting thing. Why did you say that?
I just thought about what do you do if you can't do it.
What do you do if you can't do it? You try.
Were you going to actually ask something or say something, Edward? Or?
Well, after all the heaviness we just read about, this the tendency to take shelter of silliness, so it's probably better to let it sink in. Okay, let's stop. So tomorrow we shall, Krishna allowing, we shall continue. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.